From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch, health, nutrition, fitness, and lifestyle. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
Well, smart women don't grow older, they grow younger. That's according to our next guest, Chris Crowley. His book series is Younger Next Year. This one is for women. He calls it a book of hope. Younger Next Year for Women shows you how to become functionally younger for the next 5 to 10 years and continue to live thereafter with newfound vitality. Learn how the Younger Next Year plan of following, quote, Harry's Rules, it's a program of exercise, diet, and maintaining emotional connections, will not only help you turn back your physical, biological clock, but will improve memory, cognition, mood, and more. I spoke with Chris Crowley last week in a taped interview. Chris Crowley, welcome to The Mountain Life. Great to have you back.
Glad to be with you again.
So you have created quite a, shall we call it a franchise with your Younger Next Year books. We've talked to you a handful of times. The approach that you have taken, I really like, because you are someone, you had tons of anecdotal evidence, your own body, your health, your longevity, your youthfulness. But then you said, hey, that's not good enough just to tell my story. I'm going to get these doctors on board to help me. So talk about the genesis of that.
It's a wonderful story in a way. It's too long. But briefly, I'd had the idea for the book, and I was looking around for someone, a terrific doctor, to do it with me. It turned out to be Harry Lodge. And I was seeing some woman in New York, a surgeon, about some skin problem, you know, sunspots. And I asked her, and she said, you want to see Harry Lodge? He was one of my teachers in medical school. And she said, paused and said, he's a wasp, but he's not a dope. As if that had to be cleared up. Anyhow, I went and found him. He was a wasp, and he was not a dope, and we became very close friends. And finally, I persuaded him to do the book. And he was a brilliant guy, and a lot of fun.
So that was 15 years ago, and now you're back this year celebrating that anniversary and also out with a new edition of Younger Next Year for Women.
There are new versions of both of them.
Right.
The big difference is that we've also recruited a wonderful professor of neuroscience, Alan Hamilton of Arizona, and he's also a brain surgeon, to talk about the impact of behavioral change on your brain and Alzheimer's and all that stuff. That's new. That stuff didn't exist when Harry and I were doing the first book.
Right. So we're learning so much. It's funny. We talked to a scientist just last week about the science of relationships and friendships and how important connections are to our brain, not only our brain health, but our physical health.
Absolutely. It was a big part of our first book, and it still is. We're mammals. We're designed to be together, to work together in families and packs and herds and law firms and God knows what, but we're designed to be together. There's a terrible risk in retirement of getting isolated, and it can kill you. There's a famous story, but a guy has a heart attack, goes home to an empty house. He's four times as likely to die and have a second heart attack as a person who goes home to a family. Just wild stuff. Sounds like California, but it's true.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, no, it sounds like all kinds of practicality the more that we learn about neuroscience.
You bet.
You have also a foreword in the book by Gail Sheehy, which is an interesting figure. She has written a lot of books over the years, and talk about her contribution to this book for women.
In a way, she sort of vouched us in. Harry and I were both mildly alarmed when they first told us about writing a book for women. We thought, well, wait a minute. We're going to have an old guy and a young doc going to be telling women how to live their lives. They're going to pull us apart. And so we thought we needed somebody to say, hey, they're okay. You can listen to them, which is what she did, basically. By the way, we haven't had a single negative letter from women in the 15 years the books have been out.
Oh.
Not one.
So many anecdotes that you print in your book about how this book has changed people's lives. And I think approachable it is and how entertaining it is. And you tell your stories. And I think I've said this to you before, you know, youthfulness has many different faces. And it's so interesting. I know I think you're now over 80. And
I'm 85, but it's not my fault. I've got a note from my doctor.
And every time I talk to you, I say, Not only are all of these other aspects of you very youthful, but your voice doesn't sound like an 85-year-old man. And I wonder how even it manifests within someone's voice. What's that about?
I hear that all the time. You know, they say, hey, you don't sound 85. Well, I've got to tell you, I don't behave like 85. At least I behave like the way 85 ought to be for everybody. But most people by 85 are part of the group they call the frail elderly. They've lost a huge amount of muscle mass. They've lost 10% of their muscle mass every decade and haven't done anything about it, and bone mass, and they're delicate and scared. And you can prevent all of that with the stuff we talk about.
So many people get to this point in their lives of, you know, 50 on up, and they sort of say, well, you know, I've never been a big exerciser, and it's sort of too late to start. But you talk about how life and fitness and longevity is kind of like an endurance event where you've really got to train.
You really do. And the fact that you have, you know, I'm a terrible athlete, always have been. I mean, I've exercised some, but I'm a decent skier, but that's it. But that's not the point. It's not about athleticism. It's about quality of life. Doing this stuff, even if you've never done it before, is worthwhile because it makes all the difference in the quality of your life, your health, your energy, your commitment, your interest in doing stuff, and your intelligence. It's just everything. And, you know, if you don't like it, too bad. It's so important. You just got to do it anyhow. Just, you know, tough it out.
Yeah, so your program, you say exercise 6 days a week for the rest of your life. And now this doesn't have to be really hard.
Well, the day you die, you can take that day off. That's okay.
That's okay. And it doesn't have to be really intense, but you do say, you know, also to do intense aerobic exercise 4 days a week for the rest of your life. And then you also talk about strength training. So it's multifaceted. So if you're just starting out.
The difference between strength training and aerobic exercise. Aerobics goes to health, heart health, mental health, length of life, all of those parts. Strength training goes to maintaining muscle mass, bone mass, balanced coordination, and so on. That has the most to do with quality of life. In the normal course, you know, bear in mind that the Darwinian model is to have us get old and fall apart and die. That's what Darwin wants. We don't want that. And you can avoid it by doing some stuff. It's in our control to a remarkable extent. And exercise is the key thing. Aerobic exercise 4 days a week. Strength training 2 days a week. Make it your job.
If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, my guest is Chris Crowley. He is an 85-year-old specimen, shall we say. He's co-written this book with doctors Henry Lodge and Alan Hamilton. It's called Younger Next Year. And this version is a new updated edition of Younger Next Year for Women, with special chapters on menopause and the aging brain of a woman. Aerobic exercise 4 days a week, but exercise 6 days a week. Can it be just walking briskly around the block?
No. You got to work, man. You got to change your clothes. You got to stretch yourself. Whatever is a stretch for you, you got to do. I worry that if we let them just walk around the block, you know, they're going to lie to themselves. We all lie to ourselves endlessly about exercise. But if you change your clothes and go out to the gym and climb aboard the spin class or throw your leg over your bicycle or whatever it is, or go cross-country skiing. Downhill doesn't help a lot, which I adore. But cross-country skiing, wonderful exercise. But do something a little bit demanding. Going to the garden ain't doing the job.
You know, I'm a cross-country skier. I love it. And we have this little race series in town.
Sport.
And you see people from every decade of life, starting at 4 years old on up to 85, 90 years old, doing little races. And like you say about the spin class, these are exercises that take you out of your comfort level to the extent that you're going to push yourself like you never would. And so very important.
Oh, very. And here's another thing that's kind of interesting. You know, I tell people, listen, if you never get above 60% of your max, that is to say you're sweating a little bit, you can still talk, yada, yada, that's fine. That'll do a lot for health. But if you can bear it, once you get used to it, if you can go for it a little bit and do some intervals, it'll have a bigger impact on mood, intelligence, and the intangibles. Good idea.
And so as an 85-year-old, Chris, wear a heart rate monitor? How much do you reel yourself in or make yourself work harder? How does your personal fitness look? What does it look like?
I keep a heart rate monitor on when I bike because that's my aerobic sport, basically. And it makes a difference. You know, it's so easy to dog it, you know. If you look down, you know what your heart rate is. And if you know what it means, I won't try to go explain that now. It tells you how hard you're working out. You can discipline yourself a little better. Mm-hmm. You know whether you're dogging it.
Right. I'm curious, for an 85-year-old, what is your max heart rate?
I think it is. I've been through some stuff lately. I think it's down to 160.
Okay.
165 recently, and it was 175, you know, 10 years ago.
Yeah, that's pretty high, though. The average person wouldn't, the average 85-year-old wouldn't have that high of a max heart rate.
Probably not.
Yeah,
probably
so
not.
You can still work pretty hard. You can bring it up.
Oh, my, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you bet.
Oh, that's
and
great.
And it feels good, not bad, you know?
Right, right.
But and you have to get there. You have to do it gradually. If you're in bum shape, take it easy.
Right.
Otherwise, you'll quit.
Exactly, exactly. So, you know, let's talk about the female-specific portion of the book and the difference between, say, female muscle and male muscle. This is something that I didn't really know, that our muscle is the same. It's just that men typically have more muscle mass on their larger skeletons.
Yep, it's true. The big difference is, between the books anyway, is that one of them, the tone is a little gentler in the women's book. I'm a little rough, I'm afraid. I'm a little bit boyish for some tastes. But also, there's some new information. There's different information. There's a chapter on menopause. And in the new book, there's some wonderful stuff about women and brain effectiveness. One of the sad things for me is that women, they, not only do they live longer, but they deteriorate. They hold on better mentally. They're apparently in better mental shape. They're more susceptible to Alzheimer's, but less susceptible to other forms of decline. It's interesting stuff. We're not identical.
And so again, with Alzheimer's, we know that one of the best safeguards against it is exercise and continuing
working. The only safeguard.
So the normal aging of female brains, as you mentioned, we do have some advantages. And one of those is that we connect the hemispheres more readily than men do. That was something I learned from your book.
I really did read it. Good for you.
Well, it's...
That guy, Alan Hamilton, is a smarty pants. I mean, he is not only a brain surgeon, but he's a professor of neuroscience. And there's some wonderful information, which is certainly new to me, as it probably was to most people.
Yeah, and so this is kind of how your book goes, and maybe you could explain it better than I do, of course, that you have contributors for various chapters.
Well, basically, Harry Lodge and I did the original version, and after a while, we worked it out that we'd swap chapters. My chapters were, I don't know, more motivational, hopefully a little bit funny in places, and Harry was more science and whatnot. It was a wonderful collaboration. They'd get the science to be reassured, and they'd get the I don't know what, the hoopla from me,
right.
And the report on life, you know, a report from the front, I used to say, still do. And it was an effective thing. People liked it. It was sticky. Most books don't change people's lives. This one changed a ton of people's lives. It's a nice thing.
Well, and I think it's because its message is sort of simple and clear cut. I mean, we are barraged with so much dietary information, for example.
Yep.
You know, there's the keto diet and the...
And misinformation.
Right. You know, we should eat fat. No, we shouldn't eat fat. And on and on and on. And you basically say, quit eating crap. You know, take out the processed food.
And people say, I don't know what's crap. You know what crap is. And they do.
Well, we do, yes. It just goes back to that perimeter of the store, buying food there.
That's you know, it. Fruit, veg, fish, lean meats, a little bit less red meat, and less of everything.
Right. So do you, and have you followed any particular diet throughout your life, or do you just do the everything in moderation and then what you just described?
I'm not as good as I ought to be about diet, but everything in moderation. I don't eat prepared foods. I don't go to fast food places much. I certainly don't drink sugar drinks. That ought to be a crime. I drink more than I should, like two drinks a night. At my age, ought to be one, stuff like that. But, you know, I'm decent about it.
Yeah.
And I work out like crazy.
Yes, you do. So I have a friend who's quite an athlete who's getting up there. He's 78. And he was talking about that as you get older, it takes longer, it seems, to recover. He only does intense.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, every other day. Talk about, as you have aged, what you saw in yourself as being able to continue at a high intensity that others were sort of dropping back on, and why you think the difference was so notable.
I think the mix of aerobic and strength training makes a lot of sense. I think the idea that you're going to have 2 days, you know, this is if you're out there, you know, really going for it, you have 2 days of low-level aerobic exercise where your heart rate gets up to 60%, say something like that, and 2 days where you do intervals and really kind of go for it. Mixing it up like that, by find myself getting tired from all that. I do notice, though, that, you know, you do get tired from other stuff. Just flying across the country takes me a day to recover now. That wasn't the case before. And if you have an operation or you get sick or whatever, it takes much longer to come back. I had a knee replacement last March. I'm still struggling, and I'm working hard at it, I promise you. Anyway, you recover more slowly. You just do.
So for you, is it connecting to a community that also shares your love for exercise? Do you do it alone? You know, what are the important factors there?
I do some of it alone. I cross-country ski with my wife and friends. I tend to bike alone. There are a lot of people who go out with groups and bike. That's a good idea. We do a lot of tours, which is a good idea too. But I don't know. It's just whatever happens.
So,
doing more stuff together is a good idea. If you can find pals who want to do this stuff, you're lucky.
I find that my pals keep me from bagging out at the last minute.
You know? Exactly. Yeah, exactly. No, if your wife wants to go out and you don't, well, you're going, man. You just got to go. And the same for her in reverse.
Yeah, it's great. It's wonderful to have those friends that you can send them a text message and say, make me go to spin class. I really don't want to go.
That's the stuff. You bet.
And we're always so happy when we do. So
it's amazing. You know, you think that you're just not going to be able to go through with it. Then you drag yourself off to, let's say, go to spin class. By the time you get out, you think, what a brilliant idea. I feel great. It's amazing. You always feel better after you do this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. My guest is Chris Crowley, and his book is Younger Next Year for Women. It's part of the Younger Next Year series. He has co-written it with Dr. Henry Lodge and Dr. Alan Hamilton. Chris Crowley, thank you so much for joining me on The Mountain Life. Great to talk with you again. Thanks.
Thanks.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life. If you missed part of the show or want to share it, all our shows are posted within the hour on kpcw.org under the Shows tab. We also podcast all of KPCW's Public Affair Hour shows. Wherever you find your podcast, you can find them under KPCW and the individual show name. So look for KPCW The Mountain Life and take us with you on your next road trip or commute.